Welcome to episode 11 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. This has been created to keep you occupied during the virus lockdown. My name is Tony Esmond, writer of The Whore Chronicles, Cockney Kung Fu and Atomic Hercules. Today's guest is the other half, some say better half, of the Art 92 Collective, the creator of the illustrated short story My Little Green Bike, which I have right next to me here, and co-creator, along with her partner, previous guest, and our pal Damien Edwardson, of the horror anthology Pre-Mortis. She also draws a mean Sharknado, which is not the movie, it's my dog's name. It's my buddy Helena. Helena or Helena? What should we say, H?
H, there you go, you've said it.
So I always call you H, that's fine, good. So the overview, how are you doing anyway, you all right?
I'm good, thanks, Tony, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good. It's sunny now, we've had April showers and now it's sunny where I'm sitting now, staring into the distance out of my little tiny window like I'm in a cell.
Strange year because we've had glorious sunshine, then horrendous rain, and now it's just absolutely pouring down, so it's pretty miserable here, yeah.
Sunshine and showers, that's our lives, H.
Tell me about it, it is indeed.
Now, I asked H what she would like to talk about, and after a little bit, I gave you a couple of days to think, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
I wasn't pressurising you. I try not to. And you came up with a groundbreaking book full of amazing art, and I'm definitely going to get educated, because you're the artist and I'm not. What book are you going to talk about, H?
I'm going to predominantly talk about Arkham Asylum.
Okay, good.
By Grant Morrison and illustrated by Dave McKean.
Very good. So it's Arkham, for those that don't know, it's Batman Arkham Asylum, which is, as a subtitle, A Serious House on Serious Earth, which I always find a strange sentence. A Serious House on Serious Earth.
Yeah. It is, isn't it? I never really kind of noticed that as such when I first looked at the book and thought, oh yeah, just down the centre of the cover, isn't it? Yeah.
It's not really mentioned that much. A Serious House on a Serious Earth, I'd say. But I'm not Philip Larkin, and I would never pretend to be, because it comes from a line from a poem of his called Church Going. And I was trying to interpret why that could be, and I read a couple of interviews and watched a few YouTube things, and I'm still not as certain what it is. I can only think that he is equating the church in Philip Larkin's poem with the asylum in this book. I don't know. Maybe we can discuss that as we go along. As you say, written by Grant Morrison, the first book we've done by him, and also the first book we've done by Dave McKean. So drawn by Dave McKean. Letters by Gaspar Saladino. Publication date was October 1989. It was a huge seller. I think it was off... I'm not saying this is the main reason it sold, but we just had Batman with Michael Keaton, the movie. And I think it got a little added push. Not that it isn't a bad book. It's an incredible book in many ways. It got an extra little push. And in day one, I was watching that documentary they made about Grant Morrison earlier. Is it called Walking with Gods or something like that? I think it's called. It's on YouTube. You can find the whole thing on YouTube. And it sold 120,000 in day one, which for a trade paperback, and there was a trade paperback and a hardback. And I think it sold all in all in its first stretch around a quarter of a million, which is pretty good. He was getting $1 a book. So he quite openly says that he did well about that. I think he called his house the house that Arkham bought or something like that.
Yes, I think you're right. Remember reading about that.
Yeah. And he went, basically decided off the back of that, he's going to, he's now got money, so he's going to try alcohol and drugs as he never really had before. And he's going to travel the world. So he went to a travel lodge in Heathrow, shaved his head and then got on a plane and went nuts, I think, which is the scientific
way. Isn't that all we all want to do, Tony?
Oh, so much. Yeah. It is something of a surrealist book. It's something of a controversial book. It's written in one way and drawn in another. In fact, there was the stories go that McKean and Morrison butted heads around this book quite heavily. They didn't see eye to eye always. If you get the one of the collected editions, you can see that. God, see, it's busy where I live. Hear those police sirens?
Oh.
Yeah, we've got about 10 minutes before they get up here.
So they're not after you, are they?
Probably. I suppose it's the set. Are you used to sirens in the north? Are you, or
how dare you?
Oh, you know what it is. We're missing the clapping, aren't we? We should be out clapping. Oh, I can hear the clapping. There you go.
Fireworks going off. Fireworks in this rain.
That's because we're recording this. Everyone's heard. So as I'll continue anyway. So and then we'll get on to finding a little bit about your how you found the book. But as I understand it, McKean and as I say, Morrison get on because Brian Bolland was Morrison's first choice. He'd seen
interesting.
Yeah, yeah, he'd seen his previous work on Batman and The Killing Joke, and he decided he wanted something similar. If you listen to Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman, there's a really interesting interlude, quite a famous one, where Grant Morrison talks about the end of The Killing Joke and how nobody realised it was, in actual fact, a killing, which is a really interesting little thing to listen to if anyone gets a chance. But if you also look in the back of the collected version, Morrison did thumbnails, or not more than thumbnails, actually, sort of a sketched version of it. And if you look at that, you can see Robin in it. Robin features in it.
I love seeing little thumbnails and little additions to books like that.
It's something I've done a couple of times, but is there's a lot of effort in it, and I'm not an artist, so I tend to leave that thing to the artist. But it's the sort of thing that you can do. It's we'll talk a little bit about surrealism and the art a bit more as we go along. But I just wanted to know a little bit about your sort of comics origin story, H. So where did comics come in your life? At what point?
Well, it's funny you should say that because I know me and you spoke, didn't we, Tony, about the fact that I was concerned about coming on this podcast because I don't have a foundation in comics because, I will hold my hands up right now and tell you that I don't read comics. And that's not to say that I dislike comics. I don't for one minute want people thinking, oh, I'm a snob, I don't like comics.
We wouldn't think that. And we need the numbers, H. We don't mind who reads comics. We need the numbers. Yeah. We don't mind who reads them.
But, it's because they weren't in my life. So because my first exposure to comics really was the Beano and Dandy.
Right. Yeah. I think with a lot of people it is. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I absolutely loved the Beano and Dandy. And I'd get the Beano and my brother would get the Dandy.
Right.
And then we'd swap them over and then we'd read them, But as a kid growing up I grew up in a pretty sheltered life, shall we say. It wasn't particularly cultured. And that's the only exposure I'd had. And I had no idea that other comics existed, that there weren't just like cartoon characters having high jinks with a catapult. I had no idea that other things existed.
And that's just Damien.
That is just Damien, on a Saturday night. So I had no exposure to other stuff like that. And then my first introduction to Arkham Asylum was when I went off to art college.
Ah, so, interesting. So at exactly the right time for this kind of art, I would suggest.
Absolutely, yeah. So I had this very narrow view of art, even though I was autistic as a kid and I wanted to study art and I wanted to do all that. Much to my parents' chagrin, they didn't really understand why the hell I wanted to do this.
Yeah.
So went off to art college.
Where did you go to art college, then, H, if you don't mind asking?
Where did I go, sorry?
Yeah.
Yeah, Wrexham.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
So I went off to, and it was like going to art college was essentially the making of me because I'd come from this little sheltered little town and I had no exposure to essentially anybody else other than those people around me. Yeah. Went off to art college and just met amazing people from all over the country and saw amazing art and all that kind of stuff. So I got introduced to Arkham Asylum by a guy I started dating in college. And I looked at it and I thought, it blew me away. It absolutely blew my mind. Because, and I'll confess now that I didn't read it. I just pored over the drawings. Yeah. I was completely blown away by the drawings. I was thinking, who the hell is this guy? And I went through it and I thought, I better read it, hadn't I? So I read it as well.
Yeah.
But I was completely blown away. And I know this is going to sound like a really dramatic thing to say, but there is a reason why, and I'll tell you a little bit later on.
Okay.
But it actually changed my life. I know it sounds really sort of, but I'll explain to you why. But it changed my life, this Arkham Asylum. And I thought, my God, and it's nothing to do with the story. It's to do with the actual book itself because it has a lot of meaning attached to it for me as well. Not just the art and the writing, but the actual thing itself is a package, has a lot of meaning to me.
Are you able to say why, to express why?
Yeah, because, I'll tell you why, because the guy I was dating who introduced me to it
was Grant Morrison.
Became my husband.
Oh, right. Oh.
I'm actually a multimillionaire.
Yes, so. I knew I'd seen you before. No, it was Damien. And there's Damien, who was on the show recently, and he's been on the Awesome Pod, as you both have. He's a big Batman fan, isn't he?
Absolutely. So, of course, he introduced it to me. And then, the whole thing, it changed my perception of art. It changed, I realised that because art college was could be a bit of a slog sometimes because essentially it was a little bit, it was very much like rote teaching. There was no... sort of room to be yourself, and they wanted you very narrow. They wanted you to do this, do that.
Okay.
And if you didn't do it exactly to their exacting standards, you know, you were looked down upon. So, and it was just such a change from doing, you know, still lives of crumpled up material over chairs. It was just this thing that just absolutely blew my mind. And I thought, my God, you know, it was just wonderful. I loved it.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I can see that this is an artist's book. I know I spoke to Sarah Harris a few episodes ago, and she feels very much the same about Dave McKean, I think.
Yes.
And yeah, you can tell. So a little taste. Let's give a little taste of what the book's about. We'll talk a little bit about Grant Morris, and then we'll move on to the true impetus of this episode, which will be McKean. But so essentially, it's a very basic storyline. Batman is called up by Commissioner Gordon and asked to attend. Sorry, that's wrong of me to say that. It's a very basic storyline at first glance. I think there is more complications to it once you read into it a bit.
But
It's he's called up by Commissioner Gordon. He goes along. It's a very scratchy, visually strange opening, which I'm sure we'll get to. He is. They phone. I think it's a phone call to the Joker, and the Joker is torturing someone, and Batman is forced to go into Arkham Asylum. He goes in, and it's like some kind of the inside of someone's brain. It's the madness. It's the inside. Do you remember that film Birdman that came out a few years ago, where he was running around the theatre? The theatre was the metaphor for his mind, his psyche.
Yes, yeah.
And in a lot of ways, this is very similar to that. There's it's a nightmare. He's walking and hiding and running and fighting through a nightmare. And as part of that, he comes across a number of his sort of classic villains. So obviously the Joker. There's Clayface there, who is disease ridden. And at the time, as I understand it, there was a metaphor there for HIV. The Joker is the sort of trickster by way of the devil. You know, the big bad, the nightmarish character. You've got the Mad Hatter, which is full on Lewis Carroll, but has that sort of, it's kind of cross between Sid James and a sex offender to me.
I know. Because I've made some notes about that. The fact that when I got to that page, when I first looked at it, I thought, oh my God, it's Sid James.
There's a very interesting fight with Killer Croc in almost in two parts. And there's a climb by Batman to the top of the building where he encounters, for all intents and purposes, an angel, albeit a statue of an angel. So there's all kinds of themes and metaphors running through this story.
Mm.
It's been described a couple of times I've seen as something of a wank fest of writing. You know, there's something of an indulgence to it. But you know, I forgive Morrison that, because he was so energised. There was so much energy, and he was so trying to push the boundaries. He was trying to take Batman beyond what he'd seen in Dark Knight. He wanted to give it this story. And like we said, it would have been different, I think, if Boland had drawn it. I think it would have had a whole different thing going on.
Yeah,
definitely. So did you buy this book, or were you given it? I'm sorry, I can't remember what you said there. Did you?
No, I think... no, actually, I Damien actually sort of lent it to me. And then
he's a smooth bugger, isn't he?
Isn't he? Yeah. It lent it to me and offered me a lift. I mean, what can I say to that, really?
Yeah.
You know, then we get into strange men's cars.
Yeah, couldn't do these days. Hey, darling, do you want a comic and get in my car? Yeah, it's a classic.
I know, exactly. Well, there's like a sweets in the glove compartment, you know. so it lent it to me and I poured over it. But of course now, it you know, when we got together, it became a joint thing. So we own this.
It's
now,
yours
kind of
now.
So,
yeah.
I mean, we did have duplicates of books, because we have very, not all the time, we do have different sort of tastes, but we did have some similar tastes. So when we did get together and like moving together, it's like, oh, I've got that. Oh, I've got that. You know, so a lot of the time we gave stuff away to people, you know, because if they didn't have a book, we'd give them that.
Yeah, nice.
So yeah, it's, I never really owned it until, you know, I became a joint owner of it, shall we say.
Yeah, no, I get you. No, that's good. That's good. Sometimes the best books come that way, don't they?
Absolutely, you know, yeah.
We don't like the pristine book in my house. We like a well-thumbed and dog-eared book,
definitely.
You know. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. And the spine doesn't crack when you open it. You know, it's already been cracked and it's lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Grant Morrison. Grant Morrison, MBE, believe it or not, was born in 1960 in Glasgow. I saw the Lambeck site describe him as having a Dadaist influence. I'm not so sure that the humour and the sort of whimsy comes through quite so much in Arkham Asylum, although I can see it in books like The Invisibles and maybe The Filth and stuff like that, and his later Batman and Robin stuff. But there's he's been in and out of Batman for many years. He's got a real love for the Silver Age, a real love for those characters of like Batman and Superman from DC. I think is kind of what he grew up on. He was at school. He was encouraged to work in a bank, as the career guidance teacher said that his art wasn't strong enough. He kind of started as an artist writer. I think if you watch that movie we talked about a minute, there's some flashes of a sort of I think it was like a newspaper strip he used to do for a local newspaper. He did some 2000 AD Future Shocks. He did Zenith very famously, which is a long-running series. He did Animal Man, Doom Patrol, Spider-Man, and Zoids, if you can find them. He did some Star Blazers. I don't think he got his name into that. I don't know if he was a pen name, but I think sometimes they just didn't name you. He did The Liberators in Warrior magazine. He did St. Swithin's Day with Paul Grist with Trident. Did you ever read that?
No.
About a man who's going to kill Thatcher. It's an interesting book. It really is.
It's funny you should. Whether you say, did you ever read that? Now that you say what the story's about, I'm surprised actually.
You Northerners. You're always plotting, aren't you? New Adventures of Hitler in Cut magazine, which later made its way into Crisis. He did Legend of the Dark Knight. He did the story Gothic. I think the second story in that book, Kid Eternity, with one of my favourite artists and who's going to be featured in a couple of weeks, Duncan Fegredo. He's got a real, real back catalogue of not only sort of wacky stuff like The Filth, but also sort of he's grabbed the classic characters a lot of the time, which I kind of like about him. Mm. You know, like you get Green Lantern that he's doing at the moment, or you get Happy. You know, there's a real sort of breadth of work that he does. His work is individual, sometimes not easy to tear through. Sometimes there's a depth to it. Have you read much else of his, H? Or?
No, I must confess. Because like I say, that's, you know, when I was saying at the beginning about being worried about coming on this with not being a big reader of comics or such. And I must confess as well that when I did read Arkham Asylum, and I read it, and I read it again, and I read it again, and to me, I still don't truly get it. And that's probably because I'm not a...
I don't think anyone does. I don't think we all completely get it. There's moments of it that can be a number of things, I think.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. I mean, I think the imagery speaks more to me than the actual story, because for me, I find the imagery quite allegorical and it's quite deep for me because it resonates with me personally, some of the stuff in there.
Okay.
I sounds really stupid. I see myself in there sometimes with some of the things, and I think that's how I and using air quotes, that's how I read it. I'm reading the images rather than the actual writing,
interesting,
so to speak.
Yeah.
You know.
And you can with this. And at certain points, the images are the words. The way the Joker speaks, he speaks in sort of blood red, scratched on a wall words, doesn't he? Which are at moments a little difficult to read.
I must confess that I did find that even, I mean, back in the day when I didn't need reading glasses, I found it difficult then. And even now with reading glasses, I still can't read it, some of it. And I have to, try and figure out what it's actually written down, what it's saying.
Yeah, sometimes it is difficult to work out, isn't it? Mm. It's a strange one. I think you always think it's one of those books, if you had the right actors, it would make a great radio play. Yeah, so it's got that sort of internalised thing going on, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, in many ways, to me, it's a descent into madness, isn't it? It's
Oh, totally. Totally, yeah.
There's,
that's probably why it speaks to me.
Yeah.
Now that we're all stuck at home, we're all going this descent into madness, aren't we?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a laugh a minute either. It's not, you know, it's not even Doom Patrol. It's very, very dark. I mean, this makes Legend of the Dark Knight look like an easy read sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
It's the visual and the words are both the insanity in it, so the storyline and the words, and as I say, it's a descent into madness, but it's not only a descent into madness, it's a fight against madness. And there's that famous scene where Batman stabs himself through the hand with the
shard
of glass.
I love that double page spread.
Yeah.
It's which makes me sound a bit, you know, macabre, but
that's right.
I don't know, it's this I've got a little post-it note in it.
Okay.
Because there's only three bits of writing, isn't there?
Yeah.
And that's it. And I just find that really, really powerful. It's that, to me, again, and I don't know whether, you know, other people would read into it differently, but I read into it in, and I might be completely wrong, there might be, a certain way of thinking about this, but I see it as him wanting to feel, making himself feel.
Okay, that's interesting.
By, when people... and unfortunately, people do this where they cut themselves to feel.
Yeah.
It, that's how I read it. Is he putting himself to feel, which other people might go, what the hell is she talking about?
Well, that's an interesting point of view, and one that I hadn't considered. That's because he's Batman, you mean? Because he's this hard bastard. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. I actually see if this rings true with you. I thought it was a shock to reality, to bring him back to reality. I thought he was trying to force himself back through the doors of reality, you know?
Ah, that's a good point. Yeah.
But it could be either. You're right, though. It could be either. That's the thing. That's the thing about great art, isn't it? We interpret it different ways.
It is. Because I hate it, you know, when people say to you, you know, you look at go to a gallery and you look at a painting, and then people try and explain it to you. It's like, don't explain it to me. Yeah. I want to read into it. And unless it's really bloody obvious that it's the death of Christ, or, you know, you look at a Caravaggio painting and it actually is something specific.
Yeah.
But when people go, oh, well, I think you find it's about, do you know what? I don't give a shit. I want to read it how I want to read it. I want to feel how I want to feel when I see
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's I think that the madness has an element of contagion. So there's that, the literalness of the clayface disease is compounded by the fact that they are all catching this insanity. And even the sort of non-Batman rogues gallery supervillains, if you want to call them that, they're insane as well. There's everyone's insane in this. Even the fucking statue's insane in a way. You know, carrying a weapon. Yeah.
Because if you look back at the beginning, that, you know, is from his mother, the mother's insanity.
Yes.
You know, and that whole thing, you're right, every page, there's some nod to some kind of insanity somewhere along the way.
Yeah,
it runs right the way through it.
Mm. There's a line in it which I really love, which is sometimes it's only madness that makes us what we are, which is the epitome of Batman, isn't it? That's the summation of what he is about. He's a fucking mad person. Yeah. You know, he's running about on these rooftops where literally anyone could take you out every night, you know, hurting himself beyond measure. And then he just walks straight in without fear into this mental hospital stroke prison full of, you know, the biggest villains who he in turn has trouble defeating. You were meant to imagine every week. Yeah, it's an interesting one. It really is. And it's so dark. It's a nightmarish read almost. It's a chilling read, isn't it? You know,
it is. When you put it like that, it is very much like a nightmare. It's like, you know, we've all had them, haven't you? When you woke up bloody, you know, sweating, thinking, good God. And it is very much like that, because I don't have them so much now. But when I was younger, and it's quite funny because at the beginning, you know, I'm bouncing around.
That's
here.
Fine,
at the beginning, there was this page, which as soon as I saw it, and as soon as I got given it and I was looking through it, there's a page at the beginning where there's these four panels of this kid looking at his mum. And the first panel, you can see him. And the second panel, he's slightly scratched out. Third panel, he's even more scratched out.
Yeah.
And that really spoke to me at the time. Because to me, again, I'm purely doing it from my point of view, when I'm reading into this, the pictures. He's disappearing. This kid is disappearing. At the time in my life, I was disappearing. Because, you know, I went to college, much to my parents' annoyance, that I went to college.
Yeah.
And it was the beginning of the end of my relationship with my family.
Right.
So I was disappearing as I went to college, because, you know, and then when I got into college, I kind of, you know, reappeared again, if you like. I got a new lease of life, so to speak.
Yeah, there was a reinvention element to it, perhaps.
Very much so. So that kind of, you know, that's how I kind of related to it, so to speak.
Yeah, it's so interesting. It's so full of symbolism as well.
There's very much so.
I mean, we talked about the angel a minute ago, the religious iconography in it, the fairy tale, the nightmare iconography in it. There was something I read that said that Morrison wanted to make, at one point, have the Joker as a sort of sexy nurse, which he decided against. I mean, that would have spun my poor 19-year-old head out into space, I think, if I'd seen that. Like, that would have proper freaked me out.
Totally. Because that's not, I mean, the Joker itself in the book, when I turn to that page with the Joker, it's like, oh wow, you know, he's got those ping pong eyes and
that's the weird thing about him, isn't it? That's the McKean thing about the Joker, is those eyes, I think, often.
It's wonderful. Yeah. And again, that whole thing, and I love a bit of like splatter, when people splatter stuff on drawings. Because I like Gerald Scarfe, you know, with his splatters on. I absolutely love his, funny enough, I finished reading his autobiography not long back, and it's absolutely bloody fantastic.
I do like his stuff. Yeah,
it is wonderful. It's a real page turner. But yeah, that bit, and I think, oh God, yeah. And then I got really heavily into putting splatter on my work, you know, in college, you know, which the tutors didn't particularly like. It's like, who are you being influenced by here, you know?
I met some...
Because I wasn't fitting their narrative.
just me name dropping. I met a guy in LA, Martin Rosen, who's a Guardian
Oh yeah, yeah, I know. Yeah,
yeah, and
yeah.
He had some of his dip pens. He'd been bequeathed, and he let me hold one with a picture. Yeah, that was great. Yeah, a really great guy to meet as well. Really, really sharp. You know, and I can only imagine he'd have been like that as well. Yeah. So, the other what we're talking about there is especially with the sort of the cross dressing of the Joker and stuff like that is there's a Freudian Jungian sort of thing going on as well. I know that. Morrison spoke quite a lot about he wanted to add that psychology element into it, and of course you should. It's Batman, isn't it? It's the motivational side of things is something that, of course, it's going to have. Interesting, mate. Interesting. So, okay, let's talk a little bit about McKean, because I know he's your big love in this book. You couldn't care less about Morrison, could you? Yeah, as you don't like the Scottish.
Well, it's a kind of don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm sure he's a very lovely man.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. Yeah,
But for me, it's just, you know, the artwork, just I just got completely sucked into it and completely absorbed by it, you know, regardless of what the story was. It was just, obviously, it made for me that the writer, the drawing, the artwork
was
makes the story for me.
See, it was the opposite for me because I'm a Morrison fan. I'm not a fan. I do like his work. I enjoy a lot of his work. And I bought it because it was him. McKean was secondary to me.
I
think as a 19 or 20 year old, I would have preferred to have seen Bolland because, you know, I was a super fan of his.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Oh, God, his work's beautiful.
But so different. So different. I think this may have been my first exposure to McKean, I'm going to say, I think, as well.
Well, it was for me, obviously. That's why it's, you know, and all the rest that came with it, with the book, you know, all the personal stuff and that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was my first experience. And out of that, I mean, I'll come to that in a moment, but out of seeing this, I ended up buying another book purely for the art.
Good. We'll get on to that. So, Dave McKean, born December 1963 in Berkshire. He is famous for his work of sort of multimedia, so he uses collage in his work, found objects, paint, digital work in some occasions, especially more later in a book we'll probably mention in a bit. His books include Violent Cases, Black Orchid. He did famously did the Hellblazer covers. He did Sandman covers for a number of years. Signal to Noise, which was serialised in The Face magazine. Oh, do you remember The Face, eh? the tragical comedy of Mr. Punch, Cages. He was influenced in Cages by a number of European bande dessinée and Spanish and Italian artists who he began to study. Lorenzo Matotti was one of them. Albert Breccia was another one. He had a short story comics collection called The Pictures That Tick, which I've never read, I've got to tell you. And then probably the book that I personally most love of his is a book called Black Dog. Dave McKean's Black Dog, The Dreams of Paul Nash, which I had on I think I've been up for about 2 days and I read it on the train home and got off the train and sat on the platform and finished reading it. And I really, really do love that book. He comes and goes a bit from comics. We see him for a while and he disappears again. Mm. He does a lot of travel books. He does a lot of CD covers, books of photography. He's a musician. He's made some kids' books. He's made some movies. He's an artist, I think, who... takes a lot of chances and uses a lot of different styles, you know. So, what is it particularly about your work that you're drawn to? His work that you're drawn to, and if there's any influence in your work, you know.
Well, it's funny because I think my initial attraction was the fact that I'd never seen anything like this before. You know, bear in mind I went to college in the early 90s, and like I mentioned before, I'd come from quite an insular background and hadn't had any exposure to stuff like that. You know, my parents never took me to galleries and things like that. So when I went to college and then we started going to galleries as part of like trips out, it's like, bloody hell, these places are amazing kind of thing. But this was my first exposure to something so different. And the fact that I didn't know comics didn't involve, you know, cartoon characters. They were, you know, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way by any stretch. You know, I love cartoon characters, cartoons and stuff like that. But seeing this, what drew me to it was the fact that there's an element that, it's quite painterly in parts, and there's that whole splatter effect, and I love the fact that it's painted, you know, the darkness of it as well. I mean, obviously that's due to the story that it lends itself to that. And I think when I was younger and probably not very wise, should we say, there was elements that I'd try and not so much copy, but I'd have a go at doing myself, you know, badly.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, no, this is ridiculous. Don't copy other people. Find your own style, kind of thing. But I've always looked back at some of his stuff when I was still learning in college and trying to find my own style. I'd look back at this and go, how did he, let's have a look, how did he do that?
Yeah.
Let's have a look how he might have done that, you know, because back in those days, there wasn't so much digital, it was literally, you know, painting.
Yeah. It blows your mind that this is this would have been a physical page in some form.
I know,
yeah.
I know. And then the other thing as well that blew my mind is the fact that I'd go, ooh, and this is how, you know, naive I was back in the day. I go, oh, how did he get that Hessian? How did he get that lace? And then when we went to an exhibition in 02, it was like a DC superheroes exhibition. They had some of his original panels there. And he got that effect by sticking lace on it and sticking Hessian on it. It's like, oh, for God's sake, why didn't I, you know, why didn't I realise that in my immaturity? But the fact that you could do that to get that effect rather than trying to paint it, stick it on there, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what drew me to it. Was just, for me, obviously, it's there are other people out there that do this kind of stuff. But for me, it was my first exposure. And I had no idea you could... anybody painted like this.
Yeah.
It completely blew my mind. I was just, you know, gobsmacked. And then subsequently I've seen other people's work. And a little story, actually, when I was in college, when we had our final shows, and you have to put up all your work and you get critiqued on it and you get your final mark on it. One of the guys, and I won't name any names here, but one of the guys in my class basically completely ripped off Dave McKean, completely ripped him off. And his whole show was just copied, even copied panels. And we were like,
Great.
My God.
Yeah.
And you know what? He got away with it because the tutors had never seen Dave McKean because they will have turned their noses up at stuff like this because, oh, it's comics. You know?
Yeah.
Because they were far too high, you know, highbrow for that.
Yeah.
And I thought, he's going to get away with this. And bloody hell, he did. And we were all going, oh, he's just ripped off Dave McKean.
Yeah. It was it Wally Wood said. Wally Wood says something like, if you can't trace, copy, or there's some phrase, I can't remember off the top of my head, that he says, yeah. Everything, and the old, is it Bacon who says everything is a reinterpretation of something else, or you know, he's got that whole theory, isn't it? That's strictly not exactly what I'm applying to that argument. He shouldn't have perhaps have copied it, but everything has a mirror somewhere.
Well, I mean, nothing's original, is it? Nothing's original anymore, when you think about it. You look at stuff, and sometimes I've done it, I've done stuff, and I've looked, and I've seen something in the book and thought, shit, looks like I've just ripped somebody off, but it was just something similar. But he blatantly ripped him off. Not as well, I hasten to add, but you know, but the best thing about it was it wasn't just ripping off his style. He'd actually copied actual images.
Right,
Do you know, and you think, my God, that's, if you open the book in front of it, you go, you've completely ripped that off.
Yeah.
But I was furious. There was me slaving away doing my own work.
We can't be grasses. Don't grass, but yeah.
No, nobody said anything, to be fair. You know, us artists stick together.
And now his name is Bill Sienkiewicz. No, I'm joking. The Bill had already got a start. I know, Bill. I'm sorry. The so I'm wondering as well, because this is a book and a half, or a book and a fucking half, I'm going to say, to be your first comic. So do you think it ruins you a little bit for other books? But I'm not saying anything is better or worse in some cases, but there's some more straightforward, perhaps pedestrian styles that you'd now be looking for something a little bit more in, do you think, or?
When I first, and again, this comes down to age and maturity, really, and obviously being not being a bit sort of wet behind the ears back in the day, is it probably did at the time. And then when I looked at other stuff, I'd do this comparison thing.
Yeah.
But I think as I've gotten older and I've matured and my horizons have broadened, and, you know, I've ended up, you know, immersing myself in the indie comic industry myself, you know, as a middle-aged woman, shall we say. I don't think, I think... probably I wouldn't say that now, because I obviously now realise, I don't mean I've only just realised the last 6 months, I mean, you know, over the past 20 years or so, that there's a reason why there's other stuff out there and everybody's different.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would never now, and maybe I did it in back in the day, but I would never now do a comparison going, well, it's not as good as Dave McKean. Everyone's good in their own right. Do you know what I mean?
Not everyone, I get what you're saying. Yeah, you're being nice. Yeah. Have you seen some of the trash that's out there? Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean... different people have different strengths, let's say that. And I mean, strictly speaking, moments of this are not sequential at all. You know, there's especially the opening few pages, then you'd be hard pressed to say that's sequential art at moments, but it still works. You know, it's still, I would say, to the point of being masterful. You know, there's the moments that are sequential. I'm looking at page 23 of the guy just sitting in the chair and the camera moves away from him and sort of moves around him as he's looking off into the distance. And that's the most beautiful piece of sequential art. You know, it moves and it spins and it has gravitas and it, you know, it's a really incredible thing. But
there are some beautiful bits where you find I find myself kind of immersed in it.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm there.
Yeah.
You know, in that kind of nightmarish way where you're, you know, sometimes where you have these horrible dreams where you're in the corner looking
yeah.
on something,
yeah.
and you know that nobody can actually physically see you, but you can see everything. That's how some of those excuse me pages make me feel.
Yeah.
That I'm there and I'm watching it all unfold.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I remember as a kid opening, or as a teenager opening this and watching the bugs come out of the woman's mouth. Thinking,
oh, God.
What the fuck is this? How's this a Batman comic? You know, it's like
the most that was wonderful.
Yeah, so strong.
Yeah, I absolutely, let me just go into that page now. I absolutely love that because I'm thinking, obviously, that's the insanity of his mother and the
yes.
fact that,
yeah.
you know, I've eaten. You know, it's like, oh, my God.
yeah, and there's sort yeah. of cockroaches falling out from her sort of
yeah.
stumpy teeth. Yeah, yeah, really interesting. The some of my favourite moments in it are actually at the start, is when he's approaching, when Batman is... We hardly see Batman's mouth or face, do we? There's long sequences, he's just a silhouette.
But yeah. They're lovely, just those scratchy kind of
yeah.
images where, you know, as a more seasoned artist, should we say, which
yeah.
doesn't... I don't mean by any stretch that I'm, you know... I've reached my peak and in the art
yeah.
world, but as a more seasoned, I can actually understand how he's done it, you know, and what
okay.
Mediums he's used and how he's achieved that. I'm thinking, oh God, yeah. I mean, you know, when I was younger, I probably think, oh, how the hell's he done that? But now I know how he's done it. I think, oh
yeah,
God, yeah,
it's
beautiful.
Are there any techniques there that you wanted to share with us? Just sort of things that you could say like that, this is sort of more generally how he does that area.
Yeah. I mean, looking at stuff, I mean, I can't figure out whether it's acrylic or, you know, well, it's definitely mixed media, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So some
yeah.
of the stuff you can see that he's doing, like graphite, and then a little
yes.
white pencil or touch
of
gouache
for
that.
You just to mention that bit.
Yeah.
So the graphite is the moment where he's chatting to Gordon at the start, I'm guessing you're saying. Is that right?
Let's have a look.
I'm going to say that's like page 15 or 15, 14, 15 onwards. With the long horizontal panels.
Yes.
Yeah. So
would
you say that's a sort of graphite approach there? It's very
yes.
sort of liney.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
yeah.
Now, the indistinctness of that, talking back a little bit back about themes, the indistinctness of that plays contrary to the full colour distinctness
yes.
inside the asylum.
Yeah.
And it's almost like this is a memory back to when he was asked to go in, kind of.
Yes. And
you know?
I think that's probably, you know, without talking to him, I think that's probably what he's trying to achieve is this
yeah.
kind of memory of having that conversation and the full colour of the asylum. If you think about it, you'd think, oh, well, the asylum really should be dark and black and white or sepia or monochrome of some
yeah.
description.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's done it in this full colour
yeah.
to give it that effect. So you've got that the blood and, you know, the green hair of Joker and to give it that,
first,
you know,
first,
that power.
The
really.
First Joker page, like, fucking hell. I mean,
yeah.
that's the thing made of nightmares. So I think I sent you the preceding page to that on the... on a DM earlier, didn't I? I texted it to you. The,
yes.
The as Batman walks with his once again, just a silhouette. You know, this
yeah.
strong.
Yeah.
The ears are
very
high. You know.
It's beautiful, and the only thing that's missing from that, which when I look at it, it makes me think of the Exorcist, and I know it's nothing
yeah.
like it, but
no,
you know when
it
he's
does.
Approaching. So if there was like a strong light, he'd have that cast that shadow.
Yeah.
It has that effect of somebody approaching a really.
It does. It's the
dark.
Light, the light down from the cover, the poster often of The Exorcist, isn't it? You know, the evil.
Yes.
Of, you know, and the,
yeah.
and the silhouette
so in,
of the good guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So in replacement of the light here, he's got that kind of mist at the bottom, which
that's
you know,
my favourite panel
probably...
of the book. I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah, I'm guessing that's some use of photographic mixed media, is it, with the bricks?
It's well, it,
yeah.
it looks like it. I mean, if you look at it.
Yeah.
It may well be, or it may be just, you know, really kind of detailed.
Yeah.
Because by obviously in the, maybe not so much in this, and then further on there are some photography stuff in there. But
yeah.
later on, I think certainly the use of photography and using mixed media over that.
Yeah.
Which is great if you then you know join it up with drawing and some you know some digital work and stuff. I think it works really really well. You
yeah.
get some lovely effects.
Just
you know,
just to
beautiful.
To dwell a little bit on that panel is the I love that panel because it speaks so many in so many ways. So you've got the lonely but strong, you know, cloaked figure of the Batman. You've got
yeah.
the immense building but an old building looming over him with that sort of haunted house element
yeah,
to it.
Yeah.
You know, even looks like an old school of some kind like that. You know, an old
it does. It does like an old sanatorium as
yes.
well. Because I know
yeah.
it's got that because when I went to school, my high school
yeah.
The front end of it was fairly new. The back end was an old sanatorium.
Oh, right.
So it has that feeling to it, you know. And when I think back now, sorry, I'm digressing.
No, you're not.
When
not
I think
at
back
all.
Now, I wish I'd taken photographs.
Yeah,
but it would have been, you know, a real, you know, what I mean by real, I mean in putting a reel of film in and taking a photograph. You couldn't just take a quick, when I was in school, you know, there wasn't camera phones,
I
but you
know.
think, oh God, they'd make beautiful reference images now.
Yeah, I know. Lovely black and white picture of that would be amazing.
Yeah.
But in the foreground, even right next to the viewer that the you know the voyeur is, you've got this old wintered tree and the branches
Yes.
spraying out, and it gives
Yeah.
it such amazing depth, you know, with the mist
It's
and everything.
beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because I've got a bit of a thing for trees.
Right.
I went through a phase of drawing trees, like
Yeah.
just tree after tree. And I think it's because when I used to run an art group,
Yeah.
and then every other week we'd do a new topic. And one of the topics one week was trees.
Right.
And I got really, really heavily into drawing like dark, twisted, gnarled trees. And I used to draw them with a twig. I used to whittle a twig and draw it with
Okay.
a twig and ink.
Yeah.
So you were drawing a tree, and I used to joke with them because they were of an age. They were wonderful. And I used to joke with them, going, "You're drawing a tree with a tree," and oh, they love that.
Oh
They would
yeah,
all laugh
and the
about
world
that.
explodes. Yeah, the little dips I have in of all, I've done a few trees, and they are the gnarly old trees are the most satisfying thing for me, next to the gnarly old face, I suppose. Is the yeah, it's the way I'd go with it. Yeah, I know what you mean exactly. But the yeah, so moving on from that, and the tree is at moments, and it's distinct, and there's little moments of bark on it, but it's a lot of black. He uses the branches and the way the branches play out as a there's a sinister web-like correlation to it reaching down.
Also, it
So
frames it
clever.
as well, because if you look
Yeah.
at the branches coming out, they come out the top, and there's also a branch at the bottom, so it
Yeah.
gives that
Yeah.
a bit like a viewfinder. It's tunneling in to Batman, you know, in front of
You are.
the door.
Yeah, it's
Yeah,
so
it's
good.
lovely.
And then the other thing on that page is suddenly you sweep into what he's expecting, and you
Yeah.
don't get a full shot of the Joker. You get, I know it's not watercolors, but it's like a liquidy view through the mist into the very
Yeah.
distinctive green hair and red
Yeah,
eyes
yeah.
of a an overcoated Joker, which is so well done. And
Yeah.
the Batman's
Oh, I fell
glove.
completely in love with that. I
Yeah.
just loved it. Just loved it because it looks to me like either like acrylic,
Okay,
or
right.
maybe in sort of watercolor and gouache and a bit of mixed media. But oh God, I just absolutely soak it up. I think it's lovely.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. And then if you sweep onto the next page, I'm using a Comixology thing, but if you turn to the next page, you get the Joker. You get the full fanged, the teeth of the alien on the Joker almost, aren't they? They're that exaggerated, and you
Yeah.
get, it's almost like he's, I remember seeing this the first time and thinking, has the Joker cut his eyelids off to be more sinister? There's a
Actually,
scarred
do you
element
know
to
what?
that, you
Yeah,
know.
with those ping pong eyes,
Yeah.
it does make you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
it really does. Yeah, just
Yeah.
beautiful. And you get then in the next panel. I'm not going to do every panel, folks, by the way. We're not going to bore you with every panel, but the next
Oh no, go on.
yeah. So are you right for tomorrow? Yeah, because it'll be a long one. The and then the next panel
I don't
is
need to go to bed.
the next panel, his green hair creeps into the bottom of the panel with the silhouette of Batman saying, "I'm here, Joker," but almost like vines attacking him with a redness above the joke, above the Batman, to say that he's pulled him into his world. There's that element of saying, right, you're now, the distinctive
Lovely.
colours in the Joker are red and green, you know.
Even if he didn't have that speech bubble that says "I'm here, Joker," if there was just that, you would know, because the
Yeah.
symbolism of that green sweeping, you'd know exactly what was
Yeah.
happening.
Yeah.
He was in that image. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is one of my slight criticisms of the book is the lettering, especially from the Joker, I don't find
Yeah,
particularly
I found that
readable.
really, really
Yeah.
difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, and it says, "Aren't I just good enough to eat?" But I've actually had to close up on that on the screen to make more sense of it. It's not, it's a blood splattered dialogue, and
Yeah.
it doesn't, it slows you down, it takes you out of it a
It
little bit, you know.
did. I think that's what took away some of the enjoyment of reading it, if I'm honest, because
Yeah.
it was like I found it made it a bit jarring for me
Yeah,
and a bit
it's a chore
staccato when I
to
was
read
trying
it,
to
isn't
read
it?
it.
Yeah, it is a little bit, yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Any other sort of sequences you were keen to mention at all, or?
The only other one,
Yeah.
I think we discussed earlier on about the fantastic Sid James
Yeah,
double
I
page, because
know. Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this is Sid James. And I think, I mean, again, I'm probably this isn't my favourite one that I'm going to tell you in a minute which one is my favourite bit, but
Okay.
the bit where and I do wonder whether this was a bit of a nod to Bless This House, because further down he says that this house, it does things to the mind, and I'm thinking,
Right.
is that a bit of a nod to Bless This House? You know,
Who'd have
because
thought
obviously he was
it, eh?
in that.
In the big one of the biggest selling American comics graphic novels, that Sid James and Bless His House makes a little entrance. Who'd have thought,
I
eh?
know.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought it? And of course, I'm showing my age there, aren't I, talking about Bless His
I
House
love
and
Sid
Sid
James, by the
James.
way. I'm often
Oh
compared
God,
to him.
he's
Yep.
yeah.
And I'm a big
And
fan.
the he's very much, he looks very, or should I say the other way around, really, because he'd be younger, but my father-in-law has very much like Sid James.
Okay, right, okay, class.
Poor guy.
Yeah, so this is the Mad Hatter. So they go full on Lewis Carroll in this scene, as we mentioned earlier.
Oh, totally.
He's sort of smoking a hookah pipe, sitting on the top. Look, I remember as a kid thinking, why is there a fucking giant mushroom in the Arkham Asylum? Something's gone wrong here. Yeah. This is creepy, and I suppose, I'm not sure at this time whether the stories of Lewis Carroll were as known as they are now, because he was not a nice individual, had a sort of a predilection for underage people, whether it be boys or girls, I'm not sure, but this is basically the pederast villain, isn't he, in this?
And I think that use of I don't want to speak bad of Sid James, but he had quite a frightening kind of face about him as a kid, and I think maybe that use of him as well, and that kind of close up of him, it's quite disarming, really, isn't it?
Because I remember even as a youngster, as a young kid watching Carry On films, as you used to be able to, I don't suppose you would now, but they used to watch him and I think, how does he get all those women? He's quite ugly.
Oh God! Yeah, I know, and nobody ever thought of it. It's like, yeah, but he did come across as a dirty old man, essentially.
He did, Yeah, perhaps that's the reason I get compared to him, H. I don't know.
No, I'm saying nothing.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a part of the series of trials. You know, this is a series of trials, a series of villains, which is a kind of an ongoing theme for various Batman stories. You know, it happened in Nightfall, where he has to face sort of various villains as a trial by combat, almost to see whether he can pass or fail, and this is that done on a sort of meta level, on a like we said, a surreal level, I suppose. But there is, in that, I think, and I've read a sort of a vague comparison to this online, but I think there's an element of this being a passion play. There's an element of he's the good and they're the bad, and he's fighting against it with almost like a Christ-like quality to him, which is accentuated by the religious overtones we get at moments throughout it, but most implicitly with the angel, the statue of the angel at the top while he's fighting Killer Croc. It's strange like that. It's hard to know where the script ends and where the art begins in relation to the collaboration here, you know.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, so I found it, there's a sort of profoundness to it there. It's a little bit on the nose on occasion, but, you know, Morrison was a youngish writer, and comics are never often that subtle, but I think, you know, there's a little bit of that going on, which I kind of like.
Yeah.
There's a pretentiousness to it at moments, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Did you find that at all? Or
you didn't? Yes, yeah. And that's coming from somebody who doesn't, you know, I don't know the kind of, you know, the Batman canon, as it were, and I don't, you know, not read Grant Morrison stuff before. And I did feel that a little bit. And that's why I probably let the writing go and just looked at the pretty pictures.
Yeah, yeah. Know? And he's
not so pretty.
He becomes more playful with Batman, well, significantly more playful with him, with his Chris Burnham issues and stuff like that. You know, as he goes along, but he plays Batman in various different ways. I, as you just said there, you're not a huge Batman fan, but I didn't find that this was the Batman I knew. I think maybe is why I found it strange.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas I've got no preconceptions. I've come in to it. I mean, obviously I know who Batman is, you know, and I know that the premise of it all, but I've got nothing to compare it to, essentially.
Yeah.
So you know, this is my first kind of Batman novel, if you like. You know, first Batman comic. You. So
there's an almost is there a vulnerability? Maybe there is. There's an extreme there's a sort of melodramatic element to him. He's prone to little bursts of emotion, which I think perhaps we don't see so much of these days, certainly. I have to say, the Killer Croc sequence is one of my favourite visually, and the Killer Croc he's so non-human in this. He looks like a Silurian from Doctor Who or something like that. He's so strange. He's a cross between a Muppet and a desperately dangerous lizard man. It's a really strange mixture. But then what McKean does, he turns him from being something that you can sort of shape you can visually work out the shape of, and you can see the eyes and the teeth and the bulk of it. And he makes him in, he then moves him straight into a sort of flash of speed and brutality. There's a claw, like he literally claws Batman's face off at one point and throws him off the building. There's a real energy to those pages. Just
there is, they're very much so. I'm just looking, just going through them now.
Yeah,
there's some lovely I'm gonna sound really pretentious now, but some mark making in it.
There's what, sorry, I missed that bit.
There's some lovely mark making in it.
I get you.
Painterly styles and some splashes and some scratches. Because what I like as well is, and you may or may not be aware of this, but I can see that some of the techniques they use is you get a scalpel and you put the paint on and you scratch it off and get a lovely scratchy feel to it.
There is.
And you can see that a lot, but you've got to be careful with that, because if you do it and you make a mistake, paint it back over it again makes it like lumpy and cloggy. So you've got to get it right the first time around. But I've tried it myself and I failed miserably. gone straight through the paper. It's like, damn.
He does that, but he also does it with a wink. He does it as an obvious way. When in that page where he's about to throw him off the building, the panel borders are done with that style almost. They're sort of scraped on. There's no straight lines to them. They're these sort of
lovely
white scrape. And he breaks up panels as if they're not panels. He breaks up single images with panel borders through this scraping. Really interesting.
And that's the thing that I loved when I first saw it. It's like, oh, wow. You know, not perfect little square boxes in lines. Lovely.
Really interesting. And any other pages you wanted to talk about? I think you mentioned you had one more.
Other favourite page in my double page spread is when he comes home to find that his wife and child have been killed.
Right.
And he says, I look at the doll's house, and the doll's house looks at me, and it's horrific, absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that says something about me. I don't know.
There's something bizarrely frightening about doll's houses. I'm not sure been sort of hypnotized with that as a kid in some horror film that will, tells the unexpected that had a flipping doll's house in it. But there's something creepy about them, isn't there?
There really is. Doll's houses, full stop. I mean, I wasn't a big doll fan when I was a kid. I didn't really like them. But the fact that his own kid's head is in the doll's house, and the fact that the panels is is like blood and lace, and he stuck that lace on, and there's the red blood and stuff. It's like, it's absolutely horrific.
But
amazingly drawn. I'm not, obviously the subject matter is horrible, but the way it's drawn and stuff is just amazing. Just the one panel where it's got the looks at the bottom, and this that huge eye where he's looking into the doll's house, and that's that terror in his eye, just that one eye. You can see the terror even though it's only one single eye. Like, oh my god,
when he chooses to use eyes, he does them well. He doesn't often, but he does not everyone has this sort of distinctive eye. In fact, the Batman virtually at no point has a distinctive eye throughout the whole thing.
He doesn't.
Yeah, I do look at some of these people and think they must be people that McKee knew. I do occasionally look at some of the faces and think he must have known him. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I've got to say, Tony, who on earth would draw a comic and use people that they know?
Who would do that? What kind of crazy people would do that? And then give them diseases. Yeah.
Put them into some kind of cocoon,
Right, so we're gonna have a couple of closing questions for Arkham, and then I know you want to have a quick chat about a couple of his other books. I've got just a couple of quick questions for you. How often do you reread it? If you do,
probably say sometimes I'll get the book out just to look at the beautiful art, and then I think, do you know what? I'll read it again while I'm here. So it's probably about I'd say once a year, but I've not looked at it for a couple of years until. You contacted me and I thought, I'll talk about this.
Yeah.
So it's been a while.
Yeah, it can be. Once a year is good. There's a few books I read once every couple of years or something like that. I think that's right.
Because I think they get reinvigorated, don't they? If you don't look at them for a while, you come back with a new eye because you've seen other things that might change your mind about how it looks and how it reads. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it too chaotic, do you think? I'm not putting words in your mouth. I'm just completely open question.
For me, I think it is, and I'm talking from a personal point of view here. And I'm talking, as I've said before, I'm a person who doesn't necessarily read comics, and it might be the fact that I don't read them, so I'm not familiar with the
language of them, maybe.
The language, and the cadence, and I'm not used to the way you're supposed to follow it, and that says more about me than it does about comics.
Yeah,
I hasten to add. So for me, I find it a little bit chaotic, and even the art. the sequential art is a little bit chaotic.
Yeah.
But I don't mind that because I'm not looking at it for the story. I'm looking at it purely for the beautiful artwork.
That's what I was going to say. Sometimes chaos is good. I kind of like that sometimes. Yeah.
It makes my life seem like simple and smooth when I look at chaos in a book.
I think the shell of the story is I don't call it that. The shell of the story is very simple. And I think much more is made of a simple story than perhaps other people would imagine. And I think people could learn a lesson by that. I think the simple act of Batman walking about, stroke hiding, stroke fighting his way through just one building is something that is made into something very dense and something very interesting, something very psychological and socio-political almost, with some of the disease, especially the Clayface AIDS stuff and the child sex offender.
Yeah, yeah.
There's that sort of thing going on, and it speaks to a little bit to the society of, we've got these people in
time,
a nut house.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I didn't appreciate it probably at the time when I read it necessarily, but I appreciated it as I got older and I became more worldly wise when I left my little, I nearly swore then, left my little secluded little seaside town and to a wider world. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. That's
I
fine.
I was nearly very, very disparaging about my seaside town then.
We're all self-made people, aren't we? We all make ourselves in our own interests and images. Yeah, I know what you mean. As Morrison has himself, he's become a legend in his own lunchtime in many sort of counters, isn't he? Apparently. But this is slightly dubious, but from your point of view, purely from you, out of 10 marks out of 10, what would you give it?
If I was to sort of, if I could categorise it, I think, as far as, marks out of 10 for the writing, marks out of 10 for the
artwork. Yeah, that's a good way of doing it, yeah.
Purely for the, I mean, for the writing for me, and that's purely because I don't necessarily get it and I find it a bit chaotic, I'm probably going to say like 4 out of 10.
Wow, okay.
But for the artwork for me, it's 10 out of 10 for the artwork,
yeah,
regardless of whether or not the artwork makes sense or whether it's, it's run sequentially or, it's been drawn to match the story, obviously. But for me, it's got to be a 10 out of 10. I just adore it. Yeah.
Yeah. How can you look at that and not see that that is so much better than most of the comic art we ever see, and especially today?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go with you on that. I'm going to say 10 out of 10. I'm going to say the plot, I'm going to go with you on 4 out of 10. And the actual, the implications of the art, I'm going to call it art direction, but the choreography of it as opposed to the dialogue, I think, deserves a bit more, maybe a 7 or an 8.
Okay,
that's interesting.
That one.
So we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of other books. So what did you want to talk about? Was it Black Orchid was one you wanted to mention?
Yeah, now the only reason I want to talk about that, and I'm not going to talk about it long because you'll understand why when I tell you why.
Right.
But when I looked at Arkham Asylum and I just loved his work, I thought, I've got to see some more of his work.
Yeah.
And of course, this was back in the days when we didn't have internet. You had to go to a library, you had to go to an art shop, whatever.
Yeah.
But there were some super little bookshops in Wrexham when I went to college. And they do a lot of secondhand stuff, dirt cheap. And I found this Black Orc, but I've got to tell you, it's actually Spanish. So I can't read it.
That's all right.
So it's actually Orquídea Negra. So I can't speak Spanish. I've never been able to speak Spanish.
Right.
But I bought it.
That's quite a cool little thing to have,
so
though, isn't it?
So I haven't got a bloody clue,
I bet it sounds better
about
in Spanish. I'm not being anti-English language here, but I kind of find Spanish a cool language. Yeah.
If it was Italian, I might be able to understand a little. Well, there's probably some crossover, but I'm able to understand it a little bit. Not that I can speak Italian, I hasten to add, but I know bits of it to get me by. But I bought it because I thought, this is just beautiful, because this was done in 1988.
Yeah.
And again, there's just a couple of things that kind of had an effect on me, shall we say, as far as my own artwork. And that was, there's a lovely bit on page 23 where there's a panel where there's a hand looking like it's about to pick up a pint glass, and the hand's in black and white and the glass is in full color, and it's just beautiful.
Wow.
It's just so beautifully observed. And I know it's a silly little thing. It's just people might go, what, just that panel? It's like it's just beautiful, and seeing like the bend of the fingers behind the glass. And you've got to bear in mind how young I was when I saw this, and I was still finding my feet in the art world and learning how to observe and draw, which I then went on to teach people. This is how you draw, you observe,
Okay.
And it was just that observation, because if you think people who haven't been necessarily trained in art, they would draw the fingers perfectly correctly around the glass. When they won't, they'll be distorted by the fluid. And I just love
that. Okay, interesting.
It's beautiful. And then the only other one was, there's a lovely sequence on page 24 where a guy gets up to make a phone call and he goes to a payphone, picks it up, and there's a really close-up image of him making this phone call and talking. I've got no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And I just love the angle of him looking up at the face of this guy. And again, it looks like it's done in graphite and a bit of white pencil or Tapex, even some white out. And then there's a close-up of his mouth talking. And it's just,
right.
It's just beautiful.
He does that so well, that sort of thing, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, actually. I've not read this book since it came out, and I could not tell you what the story was about at all. But I do remember it being beautiful. Yeah, that's one of those sort of. It came in like a prestige format thing, and all of us people, we were desperate. We were buying all the prestige format stuff that came out, you know, like a sort of little square bound sort of thing, spine bound thing. And I remember thinking, this is amazing. Will I ever read it though? I think I did a bit of a U. I just sort of looked at it and thought, yeah. And the other one is the other one you, I think you wanted to mention, or one of the other ones, was a book that I have not read. Is Mr. Punch? Is that what it's called?
Oh yeah, the Tragical Comedy or Comical Tragedy of Mr. Punch.
That's a great title, isn't it?
And it's just, again, I'd not read it for, and this was back from 1975, when it was done, and I'd not read it for a long, long time, and it's in a plastic cover.
75. 85.
75, I think. Let's have a look somewhere. Anyway, the picture at the back, he's very, very young in the back. So
okay, right. Yeah.
But I read it, and again, I read it again with maturity again.
Yeah.
You know, and worldly wiseness and stuff, you know, there's such a word. And the bit I like about it, and again, this has got, you know, elements of collage. It's got photographs in it, and it's got just... There's some things in it that, again, just speak to me, really.
Okay.
Because bear in mind, and I've already mentioned this, that I grew up in a seaside town, so this is kind of this is based in Southsea, and it's got that element of, you know, the seaside town shutting down, and you know, the kind of them losing custom, and because the whole idea of the Punch and Judy thing, I bloody hated Punch and Judy as a kid. I found them horrific.
Yeah, they are somewhat frightening, aren't they? Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Oh my God. And of course, there was always a Punch and Judy on the seafront when I used to walk into the main town where I lived, and I'd walk along the seafront, and there was always I could always hear this bloody squeaky voice, this Mr. Punch. I hated it. I really didn't like it, and I found it a little bit frightening. So
it's a weird thing. I always think that foreigners, you know, people from like seas over the seas, will turn up in England and think, what on earth is this rubbish?
Yeah,
it's like bizarrely grotesque, isn't it? You know,
it's horrible. And of course, the beginning of the end of the book, it starts off really quite dark, because there's the panels of drawing in, and there's panels of that are clearly photography and overlaid with drawing.
Yeah.
But it's really dark, and there's a bit where he sees his Punch and Judy, which are themselves like, you know, like little models themselves. That sounds stupid, of course they're models, but you know, the actual models are in the panel itself, not drawn.
Yeah.
And he sees the baby being thrown out of the little tent. Yeah. And this baby's got this screeching, screaming mouth. Oh God, it's horrible.
And where does he always get those sausages from that he's always bashing people up with? It's always sausages, isn't it?
Yes, sausages. Oh God. But I think because of the nature of it, because it's in the seaside town, that's the thing that kind of got me in the whole Punch and Judy thing. And there's also a little bit in it as well where there's a bit where I want to quote the little lad where he says, I woke in tears to the roar of the thunder, and for one alien moment, I was convinced that it was calling my name. And it took me back to a poem called The Night Wind Poem by Eugene Field.
Okay, all right.
And it was something that my dad used to recite to me, although he cut it down. And as an adult, I realised that he cut it down. He took some of the things, and it's just the beginning bit says, have you ever heard the night go, you, it's a pitiful sound to hear.
Right.
And he used to read it, but not read it to me, but quote it to me because he knew it. And I thought, oh God, that, you know, it sent shivers up my spine. It took me back to being a kid again. You know?
Yeah, it's back to the story that all stories that we are told at kids at some point have become frightening. You know, everything from A Company of Wolves onwards. You know, everything is like, you know, Beauty and the Beast onwards. It's all
A Company of Wolves. Yeah.
It's all at some point has been kind of turned on its head and made to frighten us at some point, even as adults. You know, yeah.
I mean, if a kid were to get hold of this book, I think it would give it nightmares, to be honest.
Because
the drawing's quite, there's quite a naivety about it.
Okay.
When you look at it. It's quite geometric, and it reminds me a little bit of, Oh, is it Cuffin Williams? There's an artist that used to, a Welsh artist, do this quite geometric
Okay.
looking people. But there's still a beauty to it. There's something very naive and, you know, beautiful about it. And there's a beautiful sequence near the back, which I found quite moving actually, where the grandfather has a row with people,
Yeah.
and then the kid's waiting for him, and then the grandfather get and he at the end of the it's like a double page spread at the bottom panel. He looks over his shoulder and he's got a tear coming out of his eye, and that's really quite moving. And
Yeah.
then it switches to him in the car, and he's got a fag in his mouth, and he's talking to his grandson, and he's wiping the tear away from his eye, and he looks down at him, and it's just a moving little panel.
Yeah.
I just love it.
It has that sort
Really,
of
really
kitchen
loved it.
sink realism, doesn't it, as well, in films that we used to
Yes.
see back then? Yeah.
Yeah. It's lovely. It's all done in. It's not actually monochrome. It's mainly grey. There's a little bit of flesh tints on the granddad's face,
Right.
but that's it. It's just flesh tints and grey, and it gives you that really dark, dingy rain. You know, in a seaside town, they forgot to close down, to quote Morrissey. You know, it's really
Yeah,
kind
yeah,
of,
yeah.
and that's very much like the seaside town I come from. It was closing down when I left, and I
Yeah.
think it's probably after this pandemic, I think it'll just shut,
I
to be
know.
quite frank. It was a really on its arse when I left,
Yeah.
and that's why what it
Well,
reminded
you
me of. And
left,
it, I.
so what's the point? Hey?
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. And it's kind of, you know, it took me back. Certainly wasn't, I didn't feel any homesick, I know that, but
Yeah.
it took me back to those days. And I thought, God, yeah. And it is, it's got a quite a frightening thing, especially there's a bit where there's a, you know, the hanging sequence with Mr. Punch and stuff. I
Right.
don't know how to do it.
Yeah, I've
You
seen
show me how.
moments of
Oh,
it.
God.
I've looked through it in the shop, and it written by Neil Gaiman. Did we say that a minute ago? Is that right?
Yes, it
Yeah.
is. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
Sorry, I should have said that.
No,
Yeah.
that's fine. No, that's fine. That's very cool, H. That's we've done well there. That's really that's exactly what I wanted from to get from you, actually, is the enlightening part about the art, and I think that's a great choice.
Oh, I'm glad, because I, like I say, I wasn't worried that, you know,
No.
my
No.
ignorance with
No.
comics and stuff would show through. It's more good. I'm more
No,
passionate about the art with
the
stuff.
and this is a book that you can read so much into as well. If you don't mind, we're
Yes,
going
of
to
course.
pause for a moment for one of our for our. We've only got one sponsor this week. I'm going to pause for an advert. Getting hot out, isn't it? And like the song says, it may be a good time to take off all your clothes. Let's get naked and bash a shuttlecock about, or lounge about by the pool with unpleasant-looking nude fat people. Rock out with your cock out. Let's all become nudists. Go back to the regular
Has
programming.
anybody ever told you you really shouldn't run around naked?
I know it's dangerous, isn't it?
It
Yeah,
is very, very
it is with my
dangerous.
dog.
Very
He
dangerous indeed.
bites me all the time. I'd hate to think, you know what I mean?
You see, you're going back to the Mr. Punch and sausages, aren't you?
Yeah, I know. Where the, oh, I've just realised what those sausages are. You've ruined my childhood. Yeah, okay. Right, so a little bit about H. That's the next thing. So Art92, which is something we haven't really mentioned yet in this episode, is you and Damien. It's just you and Damien, isn't it? I think there's no one else involved, is there? Or yeah, as a little a small art collective, let's call them. And you decided to, after both being, you know, great artists and doing art over the years, and like you say, both doing courses on it and dipping in and out, you decided let's be serious. Let's start making some comics. Is that right? Or
Yeah, because we've been obviously we've got together in art college, and you
yeah.
know, rest is history. And we've been like on and off drawing and stuff like that for donkey's years. And then a fair few years ago, I think 2014 it was, I started up an art group, and I
Yeah.
used to teach it just voluntarily, just something
Yeah,
to
so I
do in
was
the
very envious of
community
that
and
art
get
group.
people.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know.
I absolutely, you know, I absolutely loved it. It was I got a lot out of it, as did the people who turned up as well. You know, it was a two-way thing really, because I am a qualified teacher, or even though I don't actually teach for a living. And I started that because I wanted to A, do more teaching, and B, make sure my library stayed open, because I should run it out of the
Oh,
library.
nice.
And
Yeah, I
they
love a
just gave me
library.
the room for
Yeah.
free. Just get some footfall into the library, and just do something for people in the community.
Yeah.
And they absolutely loved it. I started off with about two or three people, and by the time I kind of stepped down, as it were,
Yeah.
I had 30 people turning up. I had
That's
to sit them on
great,
kids' chairs. There was that many people, you know.
isn't
Anyway, I digress. So then we started. I got back into drawing and stuff like that. And then Damien hadn't drawn for a very long time, and for various reasons, he ended up. And I won't repeat, because I know we spoke about it in his podcast.
Right.
So we said, and people used to say to us, "God, I didn't know you drew." You know,
Yeah.
"Oh, can I commission you to do this? Can I commission you?" And we thought, we'd love to, but we want to do this legitimately, so
Yeah.
that we make sure that we, you know, we pay the tax man above board and all the rest of it. So we thought, let's look into this. We looked into setting up the business so we could do everything legitimately. And we started it in 2018. You know, obviously still working full time because it's you know, it's not going to pay the mortgage anytime soon. So, and it is you know, it's a passion, really. It's a passion project because we just love it so much. But we also do it because we know that it. I know it's going to sound really cheesy now, really cliche, but it makes other people happy. And if we do something that makes people smile, then you know, I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I took up drawing very late in life. I mean, I'm in my late 60s now, and I took up drawing in the last few years. And I this year, and I absolutely love drawing.
It's lovely.
It really is. It really sucks the time away. You're not looking at your emails. You're not worrying about what, you know. I think it's a really good thing to do. Yeah,
it's a very cathartic act, and I find it very, because people, you know, when we do conventions and things like that, people say to us, "God, you must be working 6-7 days a week." It's like, well, technically, but believe it or not, even though we're working at a convention, it's actually our downtime, and we enjoy it, even though it is bloody hard work, as well you know, you're constantly switched on, and you're constantly chatting and meeting people and stuff like that. And it was at a convention one day that we both went, why don't we write a comic? We've got a comic in us, why don't we do it?
Yeah, good stuff.
So, you know, and then we did it, and we thought, and as you know, we've often been very upfront about this, that when we first did it, we thought, we were shitting ourselves, you know.
Right,
God, are people going to read this? Are people going to... You know, oh my God. And then when we finally got it and we put it out there, we were really pleased with the reception. So it's like, oh, you know, and don't get me wrong, we're quite thick skinned. If people had turned around and went, well, that's a pile of garbage, you know, it would have gone, all right then.
Yeah,
you know, we had a go. And
up yours. You had the My Little Green Bike out, you've had Pro Mortis, you've got another issue of Pro Mortis coming out, you've got Galaxy Grappling Alliance issue 2 as well.
Yeah, Damien's done his Galaxy Grappling Alliance, and he's working, he's been doing a lot of work actually on the...
I see the progress, episode. Yeah, you two are great people to follow on Instagram, I have to say, because I enjoy watching the progress that goes on there, yeah.
He does some really lovely stuff, so I'm kind of done a lot more, I must confess, I've kind of sort of thumbnailed the second part of Pro Mortis, but... it didn't really go anywhere. I thought, I'm clearly not in the right frame of mind for this. So I've been sort of concentrating on doing commissions and I've been doing a little plug here, but I've been doing some little online tutorials.
No, we were going to talk about that. Yeah. So
Sorry, fine.
No, you're not at all. Let's say you've got those two areas. So you do, it's almost like pet portraits. It's like, that makes it sound less than it are, because I own one and it's the most fully painted thing I think I've ever seen. It's like gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. So you do a bit of that. And you do cats and dogs, I think, so far. Is that right? Or,
I mean, well, essentially what came out of that is that I've had the YouTube channel for a while. And what I used to do originally was do some reviews of stuff. So, and that started because a friend of mine, to cut a very long story short, a friend of mine is the, he runs a local, like a garden.
Garden centre.
Gardens and museum kind of thing.
Okay.
So anyway, this one of... had basically made his own charcoal.
I listened to you talk about this on the video on the YouTube thing.
So he said, basically my friend contacted me. He said, do you think there's any chance you could try it out and let us know if it's any good? And I went, yeah, of course I will. I went, tell you what, I'll do a review for you. So I thought, hey, I could do a little thing on review. So I reviewed some charcoal, I reviewed some pilot pens, and I run out of things to review. And then the whole kind of tutorial thing came about because I was supposed to be doing some workshops in Manchester starting this month that I'd set up through Eventbrite. And of course, with the pandemic and stuff, they've been cancelled, which quite rightly they should. And I thought, well, why don't I just do some little mini tutorials? Because that's what the whole workshops were going to be about, was drawing cats and dogs for beginners, for complete beginners. Stuff, nothing too onerous to do, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, let's do some little mini tutorials that aren't too long. People, oh, for sake, shut up, woman. You know, they're only like 10 minutes. I think it's the longest.
Yeah.
And then I thought, actually, I'm quite enjoying this. And then people started contacting me going, oh, I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah, no, so I've been really enjoying it. Whenever I get a chance, I think I sent you my shite version of a sausage dog that you did.
No, it was lovely.
Yeah.
It was really nice
and simple to draw. That's the thing. You shaped it out and... Yeah, it was very good. Yeah, no, really good. And so far, we've had a few different.
Looking and going.
We've had a few different. That's right, man. We've had a few different dogs. We've had cats curled up. Is that the recent one? Is it? I can't remember now.
And I've just posted one tonight.
Oh, have you?
Which was a standing cat. So I've done a load of dogs.
Yeah.
I'm now going on to cat. And I won't bore people to death with like, you know, loads and loads and loads of the same thing. And then I'm going to probably go on to completely different animals like elephants and giraffes and things like that.
Yeah.
And people can do it with the kids as well. And some people have contacted me with. They've been doing their kids as part of their schooling. which I thought was really. He contacted me and said, when's the next one? When's the next one?
Yeah, so it's great for homeschooling. Yeah, it keeps the kids occupied, doesn't it? Yeah.
Absolutely right. Yeah. It keeps me occupied. And unfortunately, you have to listen to my.
No.
Really dulcet tones. And I'm really on my own voice.
Enjoy it. But, fact, that's one of the best parts of it.
I leave the mistakes in there.
You don't just draw, but you talk as well, which is the occupy. You know, there's little bits of encouragement and there's little bits about the art and stuff like that. No, very good.
Yeah. And if things happen, if I break my pencil and snap it, I just go, oh, well, I'll snap my pencil, I'll carry on. You just leave it all in there and try and keep it as natural as I can, really, without sounding too pretentious.
And
you know,
all for free.
The last thing I want to do
all for free. You know,
all for free.
It doesn't
indeed.
Cost you a thing. Yeah, that's the great thing about it. That's great, mate. So where can people find you online? So where can we go and look for these tutorials? Where can we look at your Instagram, that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you, we've got our own sort of separate accounts, but the best place to go to, because obviously there's lots of like little branches off the main one.
Yeah.
So we've got a website, which is, the usual 3wsart92.com.
Cool.
And then we've got the Instagram, which is at art92. And then from there, you've got in the bio, there's a link in there that takes you to a link tree with buttons that take you off to the website, take you off to YouTube and various other places that you can find us. You can find everything on there, essentially.
That's brilliant, mate. Yeah, thanks for tonight as well. I really enjoyed that. I think we're really hitting some gold in this podcast with people, not by me, but people coming on and talking about stuff with insight.
Yeah, they're lovely. Yeah,
really, really nice insight into that. So we're going to do the bit now that I read off before we go. But thanks, H. I've really enjoyed that.
No, thank you very much, Tony.
My pleasure. So there. I hope you enjoy that. I hope you get something out of it and you go off and find at least a couple of books there. Arkham Asylum, maybe The Black Dog, which we didn't quite get into, but I'm sure we will another time. You can find me normally at neverironanything.blogspot.com. You can buy my comics at neverironanything.bigcartel.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Ezo, yes, Ezohyz. Please pop over and listen to a proper podcast, at awesomecomics.podbean.com or on the podcast catcher of your choice. I don't know what that means. Thanks for coming on, H. As always, brilliant. Yeah, I always have a chuckle chatting to you, and that's we got a bit sensible there, but I like to think we had a few laughs as well. So brilliant stuff, mate.
Of course.
Cool.
No, thank you.
And the rest, as they say, is history.